From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block. 5 years ago, an American bombing campaign and a ground assault by U.S.-backed rebels overthrew the Taliban in Afghanistan. Since then, a lot has changed. Afghans have gone to the polls to elect a president and a parliament. More than 4 million refugees have returned home, and a number of reconstruction projects have been launched. But as NPR's Ivan Watson reports from Kabul, Afghanistan still faces many daunting challenges.
The village of Falat Khan is a collection of earth forts and mud brick farm houses built on a dusty hillside less than 30 miles from Kabul. Here, a gray-bearded potter named Haji Muhammad Nasser spins a round wooden wheel with his foot as he molds a lump of clay into what will eventually be a large pot. But Haji Muhammad has a problem. He doesn't have enough water to do his pottery. In fact, the entire village doesn't have enough water to drink. Local boys run down a hill, eagerly showing a visitor the village's only well. Drop a rock in, and you can tell the well has gone dry. Haji Muhammad says for 5 years he's heard about billions of dollars in aid money coming to the Afghan government in Kabul. But here, the potter says, he hasn't seen any results. We can't see any difference between our lives now and when we lived under the Taliban, he says. We're not even asking for electricity, the potter adds. We only want them to dig us 2 or 3 new wells. Joanna Nathan, an analyst with the International Crisis Group, says this is an all-too-common refrain among Afghans.
I think there is a palpable disillusionment today with what has been achieved, and that for most Afghans they can't point to a whole lot that has changed in their everyday lives.
South of Kabul, not far from the village of Falat Khan, an American flag flaps from the roof of a small fort. The commander here agreed to an interview, providing he not be named.
It wasn't advisable to go unescorted.
He points to Falat Khan less than a mile away and says it's from there that insurgents launch attacks against his men.
It may not be the villagers themselves, but that's a point of origin for all of our mortar attacks.
How often are you attacked in this area?
Generally, at least once a month.
But American troops in southern and eastern Afghanistan are getting hit much more often. This Taliban propaganda video shows a sniper casually taking pot shots from an impossibly high mountaintop at a column of American Humvees driving in a valley far below him.
I don't think anyone, even at the start of 2006, could have guessed the sheer sustained ferocity of the insurgency as it's seen this year.
Again, Afghan analyst Joanna Nathan.
What we have seen this year down south is standing battles. I mean, you've seen insurgents stand their ground and fight international soldiers. You've seen them throwing themselves at them in human waves. In the east, you've seen a more classic insurgency there with IED attacks, missile attacks, mainly targeted at military forces. And you've seen a growing wave of sort of terrorist attacks on the urban centres.
Thousands of people have been killed in the fighting this year, including around 150 foreign troops. Insurgents have also torched schools, assassinated government workers, and kidnapped foreigners, turning southern and eastern Afghanistan into a no-go zone. Afghan and NATO commanders say the Taliban has used Pakistani border areas as a staging ground for its guerrilla war. But the Taliban clearly enjoys some domestic support. This young man, who calls himself Samad, is a former Taliban fighter who left the movement after it was defeated in November of 2001.
Do you think a lot of the people from those days have gone back?
I think, yes, there are three reasons behind that. One is that they are sentimental, religious individuals, and they say that we fight jihad against the occupation. And the other reason is they say that they will provide security for people. Third reason is that there aren't jobs for the people.
The ex-Taliban fighter is now a shopkeeper in Kabul. And it is here in the Afghan capital where you can see the most change in the 5 years since the Taliban's overthrow. The once war-torn city now hums with commercial activity. Shopping malls have sprung up, along with 10-story office buildings, privately owned TV channels, and banks. But there are signs that the bubble here has burst. Every day, hundreds of Afghan men gather at the embassy of Iran, waiting hours in a visa line that wraps around the block. Men like Mohammed Azim say they want to leave the country. There are no jobs for us here, he says, and it's gotten too dangerous. Kabul has been hit by 7 suicide bombers since August, in addition to at least 3 other roadside bombs. The instability has unsettled even the most enthusiastic supporters of the new Afghanistan.
We've gone from a euphoric feeling to a feeling of a rescue mission now, of how do we actually get out of the mess that we're in now.
Tamim Sami is an Afghan-American who returned to Kabul in 2003 after years in exile. Since then, he has founded a farm, 2 IT companies, and a classified advertisement magazine.
So we've taken a villa, actually, and we've turned it into an office space, which is very customary now in Kabul. So we go upstairs.
But now Sami's having serious doubts. He says the turning point was a fatal accident last May, when an out-of-control American military truck slammed into rush hour traffic, killing 3 people and setting off a day of riots. As mobs roamed the streets, torching and looting foreign offices, Sami says the Afghan and international security forces were nowhere to be seen.
We didn't really feel that even within the capital we would be protected.
Sami says security threats combined with rampant corruption have crippled foreign investment.
At every interaction that you have with government, you're obligated to pay something, either a favor or write out cash. And these are not done in the in the evenings, you know, in sort of dark alleys or things like this, but they are done out in the open in the person's office.
By failing to address corruption and warlordism, says Joanna Nathan of the International Crisis Group, the Afghan government is shooting itself in the foot.
This really is for the international community and for the Karzai government to lose rather than the Taliban to win. This is about the population, you know, when it's disillusioned and disenfranchised, perhaps turning to anti-government elements.
After spending his teenage years fighting for the Taliban, 26-year-old Samad, the father of 2 children, says he now prefers being a shopkeeper. But he acknowledges that he's thought about rejoining the Taliban.
I've got land in my home village. If a warlord tries to confiscate my land, then I will definitely pick up a gun and start fighting. This has happened to some other people in my village.
Ivan Watson, NPR News, Kabul.
Tomorrow on NPR's Morning Edition, Renee Montaigne begins a series of reports on Afghanistan's police, courts, and army, 3 institutions that'll determine whether the country can become a nation of law and order.